Colin's Story, Episode 5, Soulmate.
So after arriving back in the millennium, for the further few years up until 2009, when I met someone important in my life, I just got on with my life up until then. Seemed to go into more deeper depression and things like that. PTSD still hadn't been diagnosed that even at that time. But I knew I was suffering because I was finding it really difficult to sleep, and I was getting a lot of flashbacks, even though I'd been some years later for things in the army and what have you. It seemed to hit me later, but I didn't know that it was PTSD. All I knew, one thing was for sure, was, as crazy as it may sound, I used to be frightened to go to sleep. And something in my mind was telling me, if you go to sleep, I was going to die. It's crazy, that. And I went through that for a good few years. When I did get to sleep, I would wake up screaming and things like that. And eventually was diagnosed with having PTSD. And that's the way that I lived it up until 2009. And 2009, I met a very special and, to me, unique person. I had never met anyone like this person in my life. And it happened coincidentally in Glasgow in 2009, one Saturday. I was in a pub in Glasgow city centre. And I was on my own, and I was just sitting there having a pint, and I heard all this laughing and what have you in the corner, and there was a bunch of people there. And there was one person there in particular. He was a small guy. And he wore a hat, and he had a wee walking stick. And I sat there, and I just kept on looking at this guy, and I was intrigued by him. I thought he was dead funny, and he was nice and cheerful, and you could tell that he was a wee bit a showman. Being honest, he was just a wee bit of a showman. The way that he walked, and the characteristics that he sent out to people, and there was lots and lots of laughter. And I just sat on my own, and I was just looking at him, you know what I mean? And I didn't at that time know that Robert was gay. He was just as a character who I was drawn to, that was all. And I remember I went out for a smoke outside, and I got talking to a woman who I knew had been in the company, Roberts. And I got talking to her, and I just happened to say her. I see you're in the company with that wee guy. She says, he's my friend. She was Scottish, although she lived in Bristol. She was up just to see him and what have you. I says, aye, I says to her, he seems that jolly and that, even though he's quite small. I says, but I'm sitting watching him and that. And she had said to me, she says, would you like me to introduce you to him? And I said, aye, I says, that'd be great. And that's how I met Robert, coincidentally, in a pub on a Saturday afternoon in Glasgow. Little did I know when I met Robert what that meet that day would bring to me and to Robert in both our lives. It was established quite quickly on meeting Robert that he was gay. Not that that mattered to me anyway, because it didn't. I wasn't looking at Robert to being gay, but it just so happened. So that suited me right away. Alright, he had a disability, but well, it's a gay person, he seemed alright. As it turned out, Robert was a fantastic guy. One of the nicest guys I had ever met in my life. He was so caring, so thoughtful to others. I just hadn't met anybody like Robert. He was to become my soulmate. Robert at that time had been frequenting Benidorm quite a lot, and not long into us becoming friends, he suggested to me one day, would you like to go to Benidorm? And I said, aye. I says, I'd been to Spain before, but I'd never been to Benidorm before. I says, aye. And both of us went to Spain for the first time, and it was fantastic. And it was later to be that me and Robert frequented Benidorm 2 to 3 times a year, because we loved it that much. Robert, he was into sort of show busy theatre type of musicals and all that, and so was I. So this was just an ideal partner, friendship, stroke partnership. It was just ideal for me. We went to the theatre in Glasgow, especially the King's Theatre in Glasgow. We were never at that theatre. We went to see so many shows, we enjoyed it, we loved it. And it was something that will always remain in my heart. You know what I mean? We loved eating out. We weren't really one for going to pubs at all. Although I liked a drink, he took a drink, but never really bothered too much about it. Smoking was his vice. Really, smoking was his vice. He smoked so much, you know what I mean? But as the years went on, and visiting Benidorm, here, going out for meals, going to theatre, we clicked. It didn't take long to click. And we had our ups and downs, like any relationship. So not always perfect. I would go off track at times, and as did Robert. And then when we sort of fell out with each other, it was always my fault to everyone else. And I can understand why it was always my fault. Because they felt sorry for the person who was the disabled person. So it was me, even though it wasn't my fault, it was always me who got the blame for it. Because people tend to think that, don't they? You know, there's a disabled person and they fell out and he's arguing with him, and you know what I mean, that calling, he's nothing but this and he's nothing but that. I'm not saying it wasn't my fault at times, of course it was. But, well, Robert could give as good as he got, as far as I was concerned. And which is very, very true. As I had said, Robert, at that particular time, he had the walking stick. He was aided by a walking stick. But as the years went on, Robert's health was, shall I say, deteriorating, physically deteriorating. So much so that Robert had to be aided by a wheelchair. I say aided because Robert wasn't he could walk, but very, very little distance. So he needed the wheelchair. So that was a big thing for him in his life as well. You know, I mean, it was hard enough for Robert to be having the aid of a walking stick, but now his health had took a further step, and it meant he had to get the wheelchair, which was quite sad. Robert always struggled with his disability since he was a child. He was an adopted child, Robert. His adopted mum and dad were dead. He had no sisters, no brothers, no nothing. He grew up gay. I often reflect back on it. He was such a happy wee guy that his disability was always an issue for him. But he was a strong wee character as well, and he always got on with it. You know what I mean? All Robert ever wanted to be in life or to have in life was for someone to love him who he was. Not because he's disability. He just wanted somebody to love him. So Robert struggled at school as well through his life, and it was such a shame, and we carried on. And Robert had his own house in Drumchapel, which he was adapted for his disability. And I had my own house in the city centre of Glasgow, but I was always at Robert's. Always. We'd done everything, as I had said previously, we'd done everything together. We were just so... He was my soulmate. I loved him. He loved me. He helped me. I helped him, and that was the way that our relationship went, and it was a fantastic time. We started up a comedy act in Glasgow. I felt that because we liked the theatre and all that, and Robert had qualities are her qualities and why don't we? Reflecting back on it, Robert wasn't really wanting to. Robert was doing it more for me than he was for himself. But that told me something about Robert as well. And we did start up a comedy act and started up in Glasgow. We never made any money. but that didn't matter, we didn't make any money either. In Benidorm, when we done it in Benidorm, we got our drinks and things like that, and we met other people who were in the entertainment sort of circuit in Benidorm, so we weren't caring, you know, we weren't in it for that, we were just in it for fun. Nothing else at all. And that continued for years. I decided, well, it was my idea. Decided seems a bit, but it was my idea that me and Robert should enter for Britain's Got Talent as a comedy act. And that's what we done. We entered for Britain's Got Talent, and the auditions were being held at the Exhibition Centre in Glasgow. And I wrote the script and got the props and all that already. I was excited about it. And Robert wasn't that excited about it, but Robert, he went along with it for me, which I'm very proud of him for doing that. But it never actually happened. The morning that we were going to the Exhibition Centre, I'm not caring about the work that I put in there or anything like that, but Robert took cold feet. And on the morning we were meant to go, Robert had said, I'm not doing it. So it never ever happened. And at Robert's funeral, Robert wrote his own funeral words and what he would like said. And the minister read out something at Robert's funeral, and he spoke of me, and he said at the funeral that he was sorry, that he couldn't give me what I wanted as far as Britain's Got Talent and other things were concerned. And that was read out at the funeral with Robert, and I felt that. You know what I mean? He was saying to me, he was sorry. And as I say, Robert was a funny guy, naturally funny, and some of the things that used to come out, it was crazy. I've got one thing that he said, and it's still, I think it's so funny that I've always remembered it. My car door was creaking when I was opening and I was closing it. And I had been doing this for some time. And Robert turned round to me one day, and he went like that to me. He says, you want to get some of that UB40? And I was like, I says, UB40? I says, what are you talking about? I says, don't you mean WD40? I says, UB40 is a group, you maniac. That was just a wee sort of insight into the silly wee things that Robert would say, which were naturally to him and naturally to others. Funny, he was just that wee guy, that sort of guy. And in 2018, me and Robert had a wee split up, and I was there talking to him, and he was there talking to me. And to cut a long story short here, as I said previously, I'm not telling you every single bit of this story. Maybe one day if you want to hear it, who's listening to this, then you can do. Me and Robert had a wee disagreement, and I'm back in my house, and he's in his house, and Robert had an attempted murder put upon him. He had got involved with the wrong people, and he was attacked, an attempted murder put on his life. And he received serious life-threatening injuries. which Robert never really got over. After that, we spent even more time with each other. His health, I see, was going mentally, physically, it was getting worse, but we were still... He recovered from that attack. The guy got done for attempted murder and was sentenced to eight and a half years. I couldn't believe in the High Court in Glasgow when I seen the size of the machete this guy had actually taken and attacked Robert with. It was unbelievable. But he got 8.5 years, and me and Robert still plodded on and done the things that we loved then. And last September 2019, I always wanted to visit Ground Zero in America. Since that disaster happened, I always said that one day, don't know when, one day I'm going to go and I'm going to lay flowers at Ground Zero in America. And it was a thing that I always wanted to happen in my life. And last year, September, it was my time to go to America. And it was only me who was going to America. Robert wasn't going. And the day that I went to book up for September 2019, Robert was with me, and we went into the travel agents and sitting in the travel agents, and everything was getting arranged for me. And Robert, out of the blue, just turned around and said to the travel agent guy, I'm going as well. And I turned around to Robert and I said to Robert, I says, what are you talking about? I says, you're going as well. God bless him. He says, if you think that you're going to America on your own without me, you've no chance. And I was like, oh my God. So, like, it was brilliant. So the two years booked up and we went to America, and it was an experience for me. I'd never been to America before. And it was fantastic that Robert was there. I look back on it and I don't know what I'd have done really without Robert being there, but I was willing to go. But we hadn't been there and been in America, and we were apparent to everyone that we were Scottish. By the tartan sort of clothes that we wore and hats and things like that, and we got stopped in the street and pictures taken. And I think Robert, with him dressed like that as well and in a wheelchair and knowing that we were Scottish, I think people were just wanting to know, and that's what happened. And we had a fantastic time, and we went and visited Ground Zero and the museum, and we done the Statue of Liberty, we done the Empire State Building, and it was great. And before we went to America in September, we had also booked up for Benidorm again for that Christmas and New Year. We had been to Benidorm, as I'd said many times, but we had never been to Benidorm at Christmas and the New Year. So when we came back from America, our next thing was to go to Benidorm Christmas and New Year. And before we went, Robert's health just wasn't good. And even on the morning that we were going to Benidorm, I said, let's just cancel the holiday, but Robert wasn't having it. I just knew he wasn't fit. Robert knew as well. But I'll give him his every respect. We went to Benidorm. But Robert was tired all the time. Just tired, he was just wanting to sleep all the time, you know what I mean? And he kept encouraging me to go out and enjoy myself, but I couldn't. You know, I did go out, but not for long, you know what I mean? I never went far. I couldn't even enjoy myself, you know what I mean? And I knew something within my own heart, but Robert, he just wasn't well at all. And all the times that we went to Benidorm, I don't know if anybody who's listening to this has been to Benidorm and knows there's a big hill in Benidorm, and at the top of this hill there's a big cross. A bit similar to Angel of the North in Newcastle. No sort of lines, but it's a big massive cross. And for all the years that we used to go to Benidorm, we never spoke of it in great detail at any one point, but it'd come up. It would come up now and again, but we had never bought gone up it. And Christmas came. We were in the hotel and Robert hardly touched his Christmas dinner. And then on the 28th of December, they put him on oxygen and things like that. But I can always remember this doctor looked at this nurse and I'd caught them looking at each other. And when I look back on it, the look that they gave each other was as if to say, "Not really a weekend day for this guy." And I believe that was that look that I seen. I never mentioned it to Robert. So they put him on oxygen, they told him to come back on the Saturday night, which we done. And they gave him more oxygen, a prescription for tablets. And then in the Sunday morning came, which was the 29th, obviously. I said to Robert, "You fancy going up to the outdoor market in Benidorm?" Which were frequently through the years anyway, and he wasn't up for it at all. But he said, "Aye." I said, "Are you sure?" He said, "Aye." He said, "We'll go up." But he could hardly even operate his wheelchair. But we did get to the market. Robert was always a person for buying things. He was a shopaholic. Whether it be abroad or whether it be here, he would just buy. He loved buying people presents. That was Robert's style. He loved to buy for others and things like that. But nah. I remember that day, that morning. I was walking kind of in front of him, and I turned and he wasn't there. And I was like, "Where is this wee?" That's just the way we were. And I'd get him. I said, "Where are you?" "Oh, bless him." Even in the electric wheelchair, he couldn't keep up because the market was busy and things like that. We came out to the market, and I remember the last photograph, which I've got on my phone. It was a person who had asked to take it. He was in his wheelchair just outside the market, and he wasn't well at all. We got back to the hotel. Robert was tired, went to his bed. I went down the stairs and I done a washing. The hotel had a washing machine. Done a washing, came back up the stairs with the washing, hang it up out in the veranda, went back into the room and I said to Robert, I says, "Robert," I says, "I've just hung up that washing." I can always remember his last words. He looked to me with his wee face. And he went like that to me. "That's good." That was the last words that Robert ever said to me. So I just lay on top of the bed and I was watching telly, passing the time. Robert had his tablets to take at 6:45 that night. And I says, "Robert," I says, "Right." I says, "Waking up." I says, "Time for your medication." I never got nothing initially from him. And it was the second time that I told him to wake up that I knew there was something wrong. And I'm starting to shake him and I'm shit, but this time I'm shouting at him, "Please, Robert, waking up, waking up." And then I seen slivers coming down the side of his mouth, and I kind of went into a state of shock, I suppose. And I remember running out the room door, and there was a couple who were on holiday, and they were like, "What's wrong? What's wrong?" And I said to myself, "I think my pal's died." And his wife had said, "I'll go down to the reception," which she did. and her husband went into the room. I couldn't go into the room. And he came out and he said to me that, he says, I don't know much about this sort of thing, he says, but he says, I think your wee friend has died. And before I knew it, there was the ambulance and that, and the police were there, and he was pronounced dead. In the room, and I was in shock. I didn't know what to do with myself. I didn't know what to do with myself. I'd never dealt with anything like this in my life before, especially being abroad and especially being the wee guy who I loved, and his adopted parents were dead, and we had no brothers and sisters, and I was just running all about the place trying to arrange to get his body brought back to Scotland. And I flew back from Spain on the 2nd of January. That was the day that me and Robert were actually meant to be coming back in. It was the 2nd of January, 2020. And I did come back, but without Robert. And that was really bad. On that plane and coming home without Robert. I got home, obviously I got home, and he was still over there, obviously. And when I got home, I had to arrange everything, because I was his next of kin, and I had to arrange a funeral and cars and everything that goes along with a funeral. I done the best that I could, and it went ahead. The funeral went ahead, and that's what happened. I was still, even at that point, I knew that he had died, obviously, but it was as if I was running about doing things no caring. That's what it felt like, as if I was, but I obviously was caring, but everything has been concentrated on making sure that everything was right, and I got a bit guilty for that. But there was no reason really for me to get guilty. It was just, I had to do it. And everything went well. As well as it obviously could have went. And for when he died, up until now, he's a great loss in my life. A Facebook memorial site was set up for Robert, which we've now got 150 members. Because Robert was well liked, Robert was well known. Robert, everybody loved Robert. And they really did. And if anybody wants to go onto that site, they're welcome. All you need to do is log into Facebook and put in the toolbar in memory of Robert Patterson, A1T, in memory of Robert Patterson. And everything couldn't have happened at a worse time with COVID. COVID came in. So up until now, this year has been, it's been hellish for a lot of people. It's not just me. You know what I mean? But with COVID and having the death of Robert happening this year has been really difficult, and Robert never made it up to that cross. We tried. I don't think I tell you this part. On the Friday before he died, he wanted to go up to this cross. And for all the years we'd been there, we'd never been up. I think I did say that. So we jumped into one of these disabled taxis that takes wheelchairs, and you can drive up this hill, and you go up to a certain part of the hill, and it's a car park. You've got to physically get from that car park up to the cross, which is 50 or 60 steps, and Robert got out the wheelchair, couldn't take the wheelchair up, us. But sadly, he couldn't make it. So he gets back in the wheelchair, and we actually walked back down the hill, and well, both of us took photographs and the cross, because we could still see the cross. And we got down, So as I had said on the Saturday, and blah, 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 and Robert's funeral, aye. And so COVID-19 came along, it couldn't have came along at a worse time, having to deal with everything. And since then, having to deal with everything. But I decided that it was Robert's birthday just there on September the 26th. And I decided earlier on in the year that Robert would be going up that hill. Not in person. Robert would be going up that hill. And I decided, and I booked, I'm not going to say holiday to Benidorm because it was no holiday. It was to take Robert's ashes up to the hill. And I booked up, and it was his birthday on the 26th of September, just gone, and that's when I decided that I would take that day. I decided that's when I would go back to Benidorm and take his ashes up to the cross and spread them at the cross. But unfortunately, because of COVID, that all got cancelled. It got cancelled 3 times. So that has still not happened. But one day, that will happen. Robert is going to Benidorm. And he's gone up to the cross. I've always wanted to write a book. I've been writing a book, but when I say I've been writing a book, I started to write a book about my life. But even until this day, it's something that I've never completed. I don't know if it's lack of confidence, lack of writing skills, patience, I don't know. I've wrote a lot. And when this opportunity came up with Stand Easy, I thought to myself, this could be a good opportunity for me to get things out. And so maybe, in a sense, this is my book. This recording is my book. Rather than write it. And I'm happy to be here to record this. It's something that I never ever thought would happen, because I have been told throughout the years to sit down with somebody and tell them your story, and I never ever done that. So this must have been my time to do this during COVID. You know what I mean? I'll carry on. Obviously my life without Robert, as difficult as that I know is going to be. But As my saying goes, yesterday is history, and tomorrow is a mystery. And all we have in life is the day. So I'll just lead in my life. I'm involved with different charities in Glasgow, and they've been great, supportive of me, things like that. So I'll just, what I'll do is I'll just carry on. And hopefully, for what I've got left in my life, I can be happy. Sometimes I'm happy. I get my moments. Sometimes I'm sad. And I suppose what I keep saying to myself, it's important, I'm not alone here. I'm just a story of millions of people. People have lost people through, you know, atrocious things. But that's really me at the end of my story. Although it's not a full 100% story, it's not everything that I would like to have told. But under the present circumstances that everybody's going through at the moment, I think that I've completed it probably 75%. You know what I mean? And maybe the bits that I've missed out can be filled in. Sometime, who knows? Again, tomorrow's a mystery. And I'm in the last week of this 4-week course, if you like, with Stand Easy Productions, and it's been an experience that I never thought that I would have had in my life, especially sitting here talking about the death of Robert. I never thought this would happen when I started to write my book. But there you go. I'd like to dedicate this to Robert. Everything that I've said, I want to dedicate this to Robert. But another reason I want, and I would like people to listen to my story, it's not just about me, it's not just about Robert, it's about us all. I speak a lot about being gay. I don't want anybody to experience what I have experienced in my life about being gay, about being frightened, about being paranoid, about being abused. Don't be anybody, whether you're in the forces or whether you're a civilian. Be what you are, and if people can't accept who you are, it's them who have got the problem and not you. I don't particularly care what race anyone is, whether they've got pink eyes, yellow eyes, square eyes, slanted eyes. I don't care, because there's one thing certainly that we all do have in common, and that is we all shed the same colour of blood. We're human. And I want, or I would like, this story to go out to people there, and hopefully they'll listen to it and they'll get strong. And don't be afraid. Don't ruin your life like I have. Well, I've not ruined my life, because I'm still living, but it's an ongoing battle. But I'd like everyone just to just join hands and love one another, eh? We'll always argue, we'll always have fallouts and all that, but love each other and care for each other, because we're only here for a short time. We are only here for a short time. Life isn't long. So I think I have said what I think it's coming to an end, and I would just like to thank to all of the people out there who have taken their time to listen to me. And that's it. God bless. Thank you.
The following song is titled Innocent and was written and performed by Colin Carroll and Emile Thompson. It is dedicated to Robert Patterson.
I was so innocent. I committed no crime. So lost and vulnerable. Suicide on my mind. I was so lonely in my solidarity of pain. Was this my future now? Standing in the rain. Innocent. It's what I used to be. Innocence is what you took from me. So much wiser now. But the sky still remains. I lay my weapons down. Cause everything has changed. Nothing stays the same. Innocent is what I used to be. You took from me. There's no use getting angry. I can't change the things you've done. I still see that wee boy crying, lying in his mother's arms. I stand before you now, as proud as I can. The past behind me, the future in my hands, and I'm doing what I can. Innocent is what I used to be. Innocence is what you took from me. I was innocent. It's what I used to be. You took from me.
The following organisations provide information and support for some of the issues raised in this episode. For further details, please look on the Stand Easy website at standeasyproductions.org. Crews Bereavement Care provides support after the death of someone close. This can be done face-to-face, over the phone, or in group support. They also provide bereavement support for children. For help in Scotland, phone 0845 600 2227. For the rest of the UK, it's 0808 808 1677. Or for more information, visit crews.org.uk. Hope Again provides support for children and young people affected by the death of someone close. For help, you can call 0808 808 1677, Monday to Friday, 9 till 5. Or for more information, visit hopeagain.org.uk. The Bereavement Trust offers comfort, support and practical advice to the bereaved from 6pm until 10pm every evening of the year. Phone 0800 435 455.
Fighting With Pride supports the health and well-being of LGBT plus veterans, service personnel and their families. In particular, those most impacted by the ban on LGBT plus personnel serving in the armed forces prior to January 2000. For more information, visit fightingwithpride.org.uk. Rock to Recovery is a charity for veterans and their families that provides rapid preventative interventions, specific coaching and assistance, including the provision of short and long-term refocusing support for veterans leaving the service with brain injuries and mental health issues attributable to their period of service. To find out more, visit rocktorecovery.co.uk. Combat Stress is a charity for veterans' mental health. They help with mental health problems such as post-traumatic stress disorder, anxiety and depression. They provide specialist treatment and support for veterans from every service and conflict, focusing on those with complex mental health issues. You can find more information at combatstress.org.uk.
Veterans First Point is part of NHS Scotland and the Armed Forces Community Covenant. It provides free advice and support for anyone who has served in HM Armed Forces and their families. For more information, visit veteransfirstpoint.org.uk. Colin's story was told by Colin, a Stand Easy participant in October 2020. It was recorded and introduced by myself, Jade Anderson, and edited and produced by Sandy Jamieson. This project was funded by the Community Fund, the Veterans Foundation, the Armed Forces Covenant, and the Northwood Charitable Trust.